Welcome to the C3 Church Global Podcast with Phil Pringle. Phil is the founder and senior leader of C3 Church Global, a family of over 500 churches around the world. We're passionate about bringing you fresh, inspiring devotionals to fuel your day and insightful conversations on all things church and leadership. And it all starts right now.
Well, it's a pleasure today to have Mike Kai, the pastor in Hawaii, who is breaking all the records and about to release a brand new book. Great to have you with us, Mike.
Thank you, Pastor Phil. It's an honor to be on your podcast. It is one of my mainstays. I've been listening. I've actually listened to your podcast for over 3 years, and I love how you've adjusted in the last year on how your the direction of your podcast. So it's absolutely amazing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I just thought there's so many preachers who are taking the Sunday message and dumping it on the podcast, and I just thought it kind of said to me that's a little lazy, and people have already heard that. And sitting in your car having somebody yell at you, it just glazes my eyes after a little while. So I thought, no, let's have some conversations with some really successful or interesting people around the world. Happily, you are both of those. And it's been a delight to get to know you, Mike, and to preach in your church and to have you speak at our 1,000-plus gathering, C3 Church.
That was awesome.
Yeah, thanks for doing that. How did you find that?
Yeah. I found it amazing. I love the freedom. I love the people that were in the room, the variety. There's a variety of leadership styles, creativity, characters. I absolutely loved the dinner that I got to speak at, but I absolutely loved more the time that I had with you, that when we were in, when you were doing the chapels, and I had that one day I snuck in and I sat in on your chapel. And I honestly thought to myself, what a great group of people, what an incredible tribe that I could see myself being a part of, if not just a cousin to it. I absolutely enjoyed it.
Well, you're welcome, cousin. And anytime you want to join up, we'll send some papers your way. We don't send papers to everybody, you know, like not everybody gets
that. Send me those papers, Pastor Phil. It's amazing, right. Amazing. And our church loved you. Our church loved you. They never had you. I've known you. I've crossed paths with you. Mostly in New Zealand or Australia at conferences. But when I remember distinctly one time that you practice what you preach. I saw you at the hotel in Auckland, New Zealand, and you were in the workout room, and so was I. We barely knew one another. We had circles of friends like Paul DeYoung. We had John Cameron. And there you were with your hoodie, and you were in a black sweat, and you were going to town on the elliptical machine. Pastor Phil, I thought this man is an animal. He's a beast. And you were going for it. And I didn't know what your age was, but I was surprised at a man that age was actually going for it for 35 to 40 minutes straight on an elliptical. And I had incredible respect. I already knew you as a very spiritual man, but to see you as an artist and a physical man, I loved it. Absolutely.
Well, I try and give my body about an hour a day. I've just come back from a bicycle ride, which was, about 40 kilometers. And so I try and do about 3 of those a week. And so, you know, I like to keep my heart rate down around about 45, and resting heart rate, that is. And so I think if you're going to be a preacher who is useful to people, I think part of that should be just keeping your physical body. And I'm way from perfect in that area. I've got COVID has made my T-shirts lumpy.
Wow. you know what? I was listening to your interview with the Kelseys on a drive from North Carolina to Atlanta to get to the airport. And I absolutely enjoyed that physical, talking about the fitness of not only our brains, but our bodies. And especially for someone like you who preaches with your whole body and your spirit. And your soul, you're giving it all every time that you preach, and I'm the same way. So we got to be physically fit.
Yeah, you're fit. I'm just hitting 70 now, so
that's what I'm talking about. He's almost hitting 70. I can't even believe it.
I mean,
my guys are in the room.
Yeah, so it's going to be an amazing next 20 years. watching us all growing a little older together. Tell me, Mike, okay, so this book, well, first of all, let's talk about your church, which is a phenomenal church. And how many locations have you got right now?
We've got 4 physical locations. We're building the 5th one this year, about 20 minutes away. And then if you go with our online campus, that's a legit campus now, that would be the 6th. So, yeah, and there's more to come.
Absolutely. That's apostolic, man. You are a new day apostle. There's no doubt about it. And you are the principles you're building on are sort of like pushing the church forward there in Hawaii.
Yeah, I've had some great models. I was raised up by an apostolic leader, probably one of the greatest apostles that the world has never heard of, a man named Ralph Moore. Over 2,300 churches throughout the world that have not been legislated in any way, shape, or form, going from house churches to churches our size and even churches beyond our size. And then in our backyard, we still had the great Pastor Wayne Cordero, who had his own apostolic gifting and just excellence and level and standard that we emulate. So it's kind of like we grew up in the best environment of taking the best of both worlds. And to be honest, it wasn't until I went to Australia and I got exposed to some of the great leaders of Australia and churches that I began to really see what it looked like if I could bring and bottle some of that home. And so we took a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You know, Pastor Phil, I got accused when I was younger of being hybrid chapel instead of Hope Chapel. We used to belong to the Hope Chapel family. They called me hybrid chapel. And at first I was very upset. I was insulted. I was a little offended by my brothers who didn't accept our different ways. But then I realized the older I got, I said the hybrid car is in a category all by itself.
Yeah.
And so I'll take it.
Yeah,
I'll be a hybrid.
Yeah, and the way we are perceived by others, it matters little if it's working and if it's achieving the purposes of God, so what? And I've always found, and I've tried to avoid this myself, that the previous generation of a move of God generally are the persecutors of the next move of God. And so Sauls hate Davids, you know, they just like, whether it's jealousy or they're feeling insecure or threatened. I just want to be careful that I am always encouraging, feeding, fueling that next move of God so that I can ride the wave with them.
Amen. I love that philosophy. I love that outlook.
Yeah.
I'm going to adopt that.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it's only, for me, like, I guess most of my time is speaking to leaders of churches. I just had one this week, a group here in Australia that I was speaking to. And I mean, pretty well every week I am talking with leaders. And I would say that consistently over the last 40 years, what I would think is the most limiting factor for the expansion of the kingdom is insecure leaders.
Right.
If the leader is insecure, he just blocks anybody from rising. He doesn't want the next guy to get the credit, doesn't want to share decision-making, doesn't want to share the privileges and just likes the control too much, can't give any of it away. And so once a guy gets secure and he says, no, it's good if you're better than me and it's good if I give you this. And so nothing grows under that sort of leadership. But once we unlock that key and we let others flourish, they grow the church for us.
You're absolutely right. We're going through a time right now where people have been showing up. And I don't go after transfer growth. We don't set the table for anybody else to come to our place. We believe that God makes all kinds of churches and people fit in all kinds of churches. But I've been seeing lately people coming from environments such as you have just explained that have been finding their way to our place. And I never try to delve deep and try to find out why, but why? Because I have an idea already being here for over 30-something years in this on this island. So I kind of get the idea of what that looks like. And I never want to be that.
Right.
I never want to be, and I'm looking at my guys right now, I never want to be the controlling guy that never lets anybody rise up, that never lets them achieve their full potential. I want to be that guy that can still continue to, even though we have, even though we've got like this brand and this purpose and what we're doing and an anointing with us, still leave enough room for another expression that you never know what God could do. Remember, I love what you say, because churches do plant churches, but I also think there's times when a movement can give birth to another movement.
Yes.
And the secure leader releases that potential for it to happen, rather a birthing versus a parting. I love the birthing versus the parting. The parting always hurts more, yeah, but the birthing is always celebrated in the process.
Yeah. Yeah, it's challenging in the first few mm-hmm. times it happens, when you see people wanting to start their own, not just church, but movement within your movement.
Right.
And it can be challenging, right. But I decided, look, it's stretching me, but I'm going to grow. I'm going to get bigger and yeah. accommodate for this, and let these guys feel like they've got their own turf, and they're going to grow it, and they get a lot more motivated when they feel like it's something they have ownership of, but they can still mm-hmm. walk with you and be in a flow of revival. And I think that we've just got to allow those sort of expressions today, and let you even unique expressions of people exist within our covering. Mm-hmm. Look, Mike, I wanted to jump into the topic of excellence, which is, it isn't talked about so much today as it used to be. When I first met the Lord, I was totally proud of Jesus. He was my glory mm-hmm. and the lifter of my head kind of thing. But I was so embarrassed about the church and Christians, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes, because for them, it seemed that if you were shabby, it was better than if you were well presented and doing a good job.
Right.
And if you're going to spend some money, you did it cheap because it's for the Lord.
Right.
If you're going to build a building, you just build a shoebox and put a little roof on it because you don't want to be extravagant or do it really well with good architects and brilliant designers, etc., because mm-hmm. somehow in their mind, the poverty mindset made shabbiness sanctified, more pious than doing it well. So that was my first soapbox, really, that I stood on and said, guys, we are going to, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing well. If it's not worth doing well, we're not going to do it. And I said, it'll cost more money, take more time, and bring in better qualified people. But let's go that way and represent Jesus at the best level we can, rather than bringing these offerings that Malachi was so offended by when they brought the blind cow and the sick animals, and they said, this is our offering to God. He said, why are you bringing me stuff like that? And so my feeling is that excellence definitely is deserving of the work of God. And I guess that's what your book is about.
Yes, sir. You know, I grew up, I came into the faith as a born-again Christian in 1989. So it was at definitely the Jesus People movement was done. Mm. It was over.
Yeah.
we went from we were in an elementary school that went to a very great piece of property. I remember the word excellence when I was growing up had to do with perfection.
Okay.
And so people didn't want it, right? They were burned out by perfection. So certain people, they were just burned out. We didn't like the word excellence. So we took out the word excellence. We replaced it with excellence of effort for a season. We want the excellence of effort, and absolutely we want everybody to work hard and offer that to the Lord. But then I think a shift was already happening inside of me, because I came from this service industry. I worked at the airlines before I became a pastor. I was an entrepreneur mindset before I ever went into youth ministry. And so I kind of died to those things. But then when I started designing our buildings, I always thought that they needed to be the best that we could with the money that we had. And of course, now then the resources were coming in even more, because when people spot excellence, they actually want to give to it rather than the insecure person that says, oh, they don't need my money, or this is all that they want. And then I began to have more of an excellence mindset. And I started thinking, you know, the Bible says, be excellent at what is good, be innocent of evil. I think about Daniel, who had an excellent spirit. I think about Caleb, who was a cut above. And I thought, if they're 10 times better, why couldn't we, with the Spirit of God inside of us, become 10 times better than anybody else and design those types of things. So I was really influenced by, for years, by the Queen of Sheba's interaction with King Solomon. I've done an offering talks on it. I do leadership talks on it. But Pastor Phil, about a year and a half ago, I was preaching on that interaction between the Queen of Sheba and King Solomon. Right. And at that moment, the light went off on my head. And I said, you know what this is? This is a site visit of grand proportions. Yes. This is a queen not just taking an entourage, but her staff, her executive team, on an excursion to the holy city of Zion to meet the most wisest man she ever heard of, right, to see it with her own eyes. And when she began to walk away, she mentions about a dozen things in about four verses of what she experienced. And out of that, the light came on during preaching, and I said, this needs to be a book. This has to be a book. And I kept saying through the years that great churches like C3, great churches all over America, throughout the world, Singapore, you name it, that doesn't just happen. There's not pixie dust.
Right.
It is a favor of God, but hard work. And I thought to myself, that is a book. And it was harder to name the book. I called it Build Like Solomon, See Like Sheba. I called it What? I know, like, looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane, you know. I thought of all these different titles, Pastor. And then finally, it was like naming it was easier to name my daughters than it was this book. And I finally settled on, because of the pressure of the publishers. The pressure of the publishers made me finally come up with a title, and I called it, That Doesn't Just Happen, How Excellence Accelerates Everything.
Incredible.
And so...
Yeah.
Excellence is doing the best you can with what you have.
Yeah.
So you could be a 500-member church and be excellent, yeah, in your presentation and what you do. You don't have to have a lot of money. You could press your clothing. You could look good. You could look sharp. You could be excellent in your speech, in your conduct, in your communication, in your circling back, closing the loop, following through. I want my people in our church and my staff to exude a spirit of excellence.
That's awesome.
Because it just gives glory to God.
Yeah, it does.
That's the way I see it.
Yeah, it does. Now, this, in my view, there's two pitfalls with excellence. And I think it's always good to aim for the upside, but be aware of the other side of it. And one you've already mentioned, mm-hmm, that people, when they hear excellence, they think perfection. But actually, when Jesus said, like, be perfect as my Father in heaven is perfect, I dropped, mm-hmm, the Bible. I thought, Lord, I can cope with everything you say except for this one. I can't see how that can be. You're saying,
yeah,
you're asking me to, you said, be perfect like God in heaven is perfect? Goodness me. I mean, how's that ever going to happen? So this was me thinking this was what excellence was. But then I did a little study on it. That word perfect actually literally means the ability to repair and adjust.
Mm.
So it's saying,
wow,
it's saying that if you are perfect, then damage and wounding and offenses and all these things are inevitable in life.
Right.
But the perfect person has the capacity to repair it when it happens. They have a capacity to say, I'm sorry, or they have a capacity, mm-hmm, to say, I forgive you. And if it's not an offense where a sorrow, you know, an apology or forgiveness is needed, then it's in the zone of adjustment where your wife, mm-hmm, says, I want to go shopping, and you say, I want to have a coffee. And so she's, you know, she says, well, I can do it at 2:00. And you say, well, I can come right by at 2:30. And so you adjust and you get it working, because it's not that anybody's doing anything wrong. You just have an, mm-hmm, ability to be flexible. And that's a perfect person, apparently. So God says,
wow,
you know, like, excellence of life is that you are able to repair and make adjustments in your life. That's a pretty interesting thought, isn't it?
It is. I've never studied that word. And I'm glad that you just broke it down for us because you parsed it, because it's so important. Because if you look at just by the first glance, you see the word perfect, be perfect. Because you have, none of us will ever be perfect. Only Jesus was. But now for you to break down that word for us and tell us what it really means to self-repair, I love that. I love that. I love that. So how do you feel like excellence has impacted your great ministry? Because when I look at you, I look at Pastor Chris, I look at your movement, I see an excellent work. I've heard of your excellent buildings. Your Pathfinders ministry is something that has been emulated here in Hawaii and beyond. Tell us, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Well, okay, so the second deal, first one was perfection. The second one is that it could endanger authenticity if I'm just trying to be slick. Because nowadays, everybody who's, you know, saying like the videos that are the most believable on YouTube are the short, imperfect ones.
Right.
So if we take that word excellence to mean perfect, like you said before, then we're missing the point.
Yeah.
And I don't believe we should ever compromise our authenticity. And if just presenting ourselves as we really are, like my wife's Instagram account, she gets all these views because she just shows, you know, not the ones that I put up, but she puts up, you know, us doing very ordinary things at home, like brushing the dog or...
I saw that. On the Queen's Day.
I know. On
the Queen's getting the dog ready for the Queen's Day. So I love it.
People, like, they love just seeing you in your... And that can be termed excellence as much as doing a building really well. And I think that the framework for our lives should always have excellence attached to it. I think what you said before, everything comes out of an excellent spirit. And like you said, Daniel had that. And I believe that if a person has an excellence of spirit, they can make any environment appear wonderful. And I think, I remember Corrie ten Boom, when she was put in prison, with her sister. She said her sister could make any place look wonderful. She made the prison cell. She put a little curtain up, did certain things in the prison cell and just turned it into a far more beautiful place. And in my view, excellence can be manifested in all sorts of ways. But more than any other way, I think excellence of spirit is really at the top of the list.
I agree. Can I tell you a story? When Lisa and I first got married 27 years ago, I was living... on the street of a housing project. Lisa and I just got married. Courtney, I was a single father. Courtney was only 5 years old, 6 years old. And we were living in a really rough part of Honolulu. We weren't living in the housing project, but we were living on a, renting from the downstairs of a home of someone that lived near the housing project. So we were renting this home. On lunch break, I took a guy home to lunch with me, one of my friends named Keith, because we didn't want to spend any money for lunch because Lisa had a lot of leftovers. So we went home to eat the leftovers. Granted, my home was filled with furniture that everybody gave to us, donated to us. Here is a armoire. Here is a credenza. I'm not using it. Come pick up this rattan glass table for your dinner. Come. It was piecemeal. The only thing that we had brand new was our bed. That was the only thing that was brand new. I bring him into the house. And he sits down, and he doesn't even sit down, and he stops, and he looks around, he goes, wow. And this is not even a Christian. This guy goes, Mike. And he knows I'm a Christian. He goes, Mike. I go, what? He goes, I can feel God here. I can feel God in your house. And that was the non-Christian telling me how he felt when he came into my environment. I would call that an excellent environment. I didn't have the most expensive furniture. I had hand-me-down furniture. But he felt the presence of God where he was. I don't want to ever see excellence overrule the presence.
Right.
Without his presence in my church, we're nothing. But if we have gotten so good, so slick that we've programmed him out or anything, then I would pull that back as fast as I can and drop to my knees and say, let's get back to what this is really about. And this is all about him. Never mind the periphery. I would do that. I would rip out the chairs. I'd pull out the carpet. I'd paint everything white from dark gray. I'd remove the LED screens. I'd bring out an overhead projector to do whatever I needed to do if excellence has taken away the presence of God.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And, you know, just this Sunday, I was in one of our new locations, and they haven't even got a stage. They're on a Persian carpet. They haven't got a set of drums. This little girl is playing the drums. Mum's playing the guitar. And Dad's playing the lead guitar, and there's no smoke, no lights. It's just a bare room that we've managed to put together. We rent it as a church, you know, for them, and it's growing flat out. It is amazing to me that that, you know, like people can shift their reliance from the Lord and the presence of God onto the machinery that they've been able to use. And I think we just got to be careful that our faith remains in the Lord and in the presence of God to do the work that we are wanting to be done. Flash music and lights and big LED screens, they can be impressive, but nobody gets born again by those things. It's that presence of the Lord. And I think if our worship is excellent, that doesn't mean that it's so polished and perfect and incredible, you know, pitch perfect. It just is excellent. Then we're going to find the presence of God is there. If it's from the heart, it's going to be a beautiful thing.
Amen. I agree. I totally agree.
So the other thing with excellence that I've written a book called Financial Excellence. Mm-hmm. And I believe that that begins by actually, I think the excellence of a church begins in several areas. One is the excellence of hospitality.
Yeah.
Another one is encouragement, that there's a culture of encouragement. But I also think that the worship of a church is enhanced by the giving. If the offerings of the church are in the zone of excellence, then I think that breeds a spirit of excellence throughout the whole building, because then you've got the finance to do the things that you want to do. But I think that teaching on bringing the Lord, not just leftovers, like you said before, I mean, when we were starting our church, we would have people turn up, you know, with carpet in a trailer on the back of their car, saying, look, Pastor, we're just putting new carpet in our house. We brought down the old stuff, wondered if the church can use.
Right, I know. Let's give it to the church.
Here's an old computer. The W doesn't work. And, you know, and look, we've got a few leftover things here. I just said, take it to the dump. Don't be insulting to the church or to God. Bring him the best you have. And if we, you know, like, I mean, I appreciate the sentiment, but Malachi was so horrified that they were trying to get rid of their dysfunctional animals as offerings. They were going to shoot the thing anyway and put it down the hole, but let's take it down to the temple. He said, take it away. I don't want your shabby offerings. Bring me what you would rather not give me.
So right. So good. I mean, you can imagine like, this one's missing an ear. I think the church could use it. Or, you know, this one's got three hooves. It's got a fifth hoof. Let's give it to the church. The church will like it. I know. I mean, it's a poverty mentality that says that the church is in a poverty condition, but we're not. I mean, we're positioned in a place of blessing, of favor, that when people come and bring their best, I think they're going to get their best. But if it's a switch of the thoughts I think it's a switch of the way people perceive what church is and who God is. I think makes them flip the switch with excellence. When I started reading your book, The Keys to Financial Excellence, that was out of the box for me. And that was about 5 years ago. Right. And today it is one of the best books I've ever written on finances.
Right.
On personal and church finances. I loved it. And offerings and tithing. And there's so many messages in that. That thing is gold. Do you still publish that in America? Is it on Amazon? You can get it in America?
Yeah, we've got it online, I think. People can still order it. And it has helped a lot of pastors, because they would hear me do these offering messages and they'd say, look, can you put that in a book for us? And, you know, because we're always looking for something. And I find that if people, but it's not about, you know, raising money or anything like that. It's about our people having an excellent attitude towards God in their worship. I mean, none of us would enjoy somebody bringing a pizza around and they've eaten half of it on the way and they say, look, we've got these leftovers. I've brought this bike for your birthday. I've been using it for a while, but it's like the, it's an issue of honor, I think. And I think that if we look, Mike, we got about 2 minutes to go, three minutes to go. Can I ask you how, very quickly, how you feel the world of excellence and excellence culture has accelerated things in your world?
I'm glad you asked. It's a great question. For us, excellence has accelerated a lot of things. When I think about excellence accelerates everything, I mean, it gets you there faster. It'll get you there faster. What takes longer to do, you actually get there faster. So for instance, I think our excellent attitude and our excellent spirit has given us inroads into media, into the state, with people in office, in politics, that we probably wouldn't have had before, that are asking for our input, that actually want to have lunch, they want to sit down. It's been quite incredible. Going from a candidate for governor, I'm not going to mention his name, who gave me his personal cell phone number and said, I would love to talk to you, to the mayor who ran and won office saying that we're having lunch in August, to a congressman in Washington who has sent an email through his assistant that he would like to know more about Inspire Church. He's from Hawaii. He'd love to know more about Inspire Church. I contribute that to, number one, of course, the favor of God, but I think excellence got us there faster than it normally would have. I think excellence, when I mean it accelerates everything, I actually mean that it in your own personal life and in people's businesses, because in a world filled with good enough, oh, that's good enough. In Hawaii, there's a lot of, good enough. Australia, she'd be right, mate. You know,
it's that's like, exactly that's fine. Right. Exactly.
Exactly. Right. That's where I grow up. I grow up here in Hawaii, where I love my laid back Hawaiian attitude, but there's got to be this holy aloha hustle at the same time that makes you work hard, that has excellence in circling back in how we deal with people. And I think it gets you there further than you ever wanted to go. I think it's also an elevator. It'll take you higher. I also think it's a separator. It'll distance you from everybody else. But I also think for the business person, it's an income generator. You'll actually bring in more resources if you're excellent. And so I think excellence has so many facets to it.
Well, thanks, Mike. We're going to have to call it a day. I so appreciate you talking with us. The reason is because the Zoom call is about to close up on
us. Thank you for the honor.
Don't want to find us clipped off. Love you, man. And thank you so much.
Appreciate you. Love you, too. God bless.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the C3 Church Global Podcast. Let us know what you thought by leaving a review and connect with us on Instagram @C3 Church Global. We hope you'll be back real soon.